Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for January 25th, 2013.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
Babies seem to come into the world knowing a little something about the very small parts of language, the vowels.
Survival has increased from 51% in the early 1990s to 71% today.
Some of them became creative at the level where they could sell paintings in galleries and people would buy them.
This week, scientists have developed a test for Parkinson's disease. Also, drugs for the condition may have beneficial side effects. There's good news about cancer, and researchers say babies start learning their native tongue before they're even born. But first, Suzanne Bard investigates why grown-ups don't form long-term memories as well as kids do.
Kids are like information sponges, but it gets harder to form long-term memories after puberty. Researchers used to think this is because adult brains have a harder time forming connections between nerve cells. But new research suggests that's not the case. Instead, kids' brains may be better at weakening existing connections that aren't useful. Neuroscientist Joe Cien of Georgia Regents University says this makes new memories stronger.
You can think of as the background noise being reduced, and therefore the newly created information would be more robust.
He likens this to writing with a black pen on either white paper or a newspaper. The letters will be much more readable if a white background is used instead of one that already has writing on it. A similar thing happens with memories. Cien says this may be one reason children can learn to speak foreign languages without an accent, but adults usually can't. To reach their conclusions, he and his colleagues studied young mice who were bred to have adult levels of a memory receptor called NMDA. Like adults, they had a harder time getting rid of connections that were no longer needed, which got in the way of their ability to form long-term memories. He says human brains probably work the same way.
Thanks, Suzanne. Babies learn a lot about their mother's native language even before they're born. This according to developmental psychologist Christine Moon of Pacific Lutheran University. Moon notes that newborns were already known to respond differently to conversations in their mother's native tongue as opposed to a foreign language. She and her colleagues showed that the discrimination extends to isolated vowel sounds, in this case, English vowels versus Swedish vowels.
And we, until now, believed that that information was not readily available to them in the womb, that it was much more likely that they could be learning about the melody and the rhythm and the differences in loudness in the flow of speech.
The findings offer new insight into normal language development. Moon says it's also worth finding out if premature babies who hear sounds through the air earlier in their development acquire language differently than full-term babies. Many people, including Michael J. Fox and Muhammad Ali, are living with a diagnosis of Parkinson's disease, but the condition can't be confirmed until after death. Correspondent Justin Warner tells us how a test of the salivary glands, of all things, may change that.
As of now, Parkinson's disease can only truly be diagnosed by looking at brain tissue in an autopsy. But a new technique may change that. It's being developed by neurologist Charles Adler of the Mayo Clinic College of Medicine in Scottsdale, Arizona. He explains that a key marker of Parkinson's in autopsy studies is an abnormal protein called alpha-synuclein, which accumulates in the brain. Previously, his team found that the salivary glands of deceased confirmed Parkinson's patients were also packed with alpha-synuclein.
28 out of 28 of them actually had abnormal alpha-synuclein in them, and so that's what led us to do the biopsies.
These biopsies were taken from the salivary glands of living patients with a working diagnosis of Parkinson's. The researchers again looked for the protein.
And we were able to find that in 9 out of the 11 cases that we had enough tissue to study.
Adler notes that currently, autopsies of patients who had been treated for Parkinson's sometimes show they didn't really have the disease after all. If the salivary biopsy proves effective, those false diagnoses could be reduced.
Thanks, Justin. In related news, we're used to hearing long lists of possible drug side effects that could harm us, but sometimes side effects can be beneficial. Suzanne tells us about a surprising side effect of medications for Parkinson's disease.
In some cases, the effects of Parkinson's disease medications may include enhanced creativity. This according to neurologist Rivka Inselberg of Tel Aviv University in Israel. She reviewed case studies from around the world, all describing Parkinson's patients that suddenly took up art, poetry, and other forms of creative expression during treatment. Many of them had little prior experience in the arts.
Some of them became creative at the level where they could sell paintings in galleries and people would buy them.
Inselberg says that drugs for Parkinson's boost dopamine, a brain chemical associated with reward and personal satisfaction. In this case, a dopamine surge could make some people more motivated to create art and more satisfied with their creations. Understanding why some patients are predisposed to this side effect could help researchers piece apart the nature of creativity itself.
Thanks, Suzanne. When you hear a news report about a disease, it's rarely uplifting. But Justin has some good news on the cancer front.
Death rates from cancer in the United States have dropped 20% since their 1991 peak, even though incidence rates have barely changed at all. This according to a new report from the American Cancer Society, which includes data through 2009. Director of Surveillance Information Rebecca Siegel says the drops are even steeper for the four biggest cancer sites: colorectal, breast, lung, and prostate.
One of the biggest influences, of course, is the decrease in the number of people who are smoking. And we see that influence not only on lung cancer, but on about 20 other cancers that are also associated with smoking.
Breakthroughs in treatment and early detection have also helped. That's evident in 5-year survival rates for cancers like non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, which has many aggressive types.
Survival has increased from 51% in the early 1990s to 71% today.
The report says that some types of cancer do have rising death rates, including melanoma and cancer of the liver, thyroid, and pancreas. Still, the 20-year overall decline translates into about 1.2 million deaths prevented.
Thanks, Justin. Well, that's all we have for you this week. Next week, we'll have more exciting science stories for you. But if you can't wait that long, tune into the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. And if you have a science question, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, we'll send you a Science Update mug. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.